Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, July 31st, 2011, and this is show number 323. Last week during the live show, Steve surprised me with a letter from Twit. It turns out that George from Tulsa bought a brick for the Twit Brick House in honor of the NoSilla Castaways. How awesome is that? I really want to thank George for his generosity on behalf of all the NoSilla Castaways. I think that makes about the 12th cool thing he's done for the show, on top of all of his unique reviews. Thank you, George, from the bottom of my heart. That was a really, really cool gesture. Well, we've got a packed show today, so let's just dig right in. Let's start out with a dumb question from Professor Albert that's actually quite short, but I managed to turn into a doctoral dissertation in my answer.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
What do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Hello, Allison Sheridan, the very best podcaster in the world. This is Professor Albert, and I need your help again. As you know, I am a motivational music superstar, and I am also an inventor. I just recently invented Professor Albert's Super Boomer Zoomer battery for my 2005 iMac computer there. I now attach this battery to the back of the iMac, and I can take it to the beach, the park, even Starbucks. Although when I go there with this big computer on my back, they think I'm crazy. Professor Albert's Super Boomer Zoomer battery actually runs 5 years without a charge. As you know, liquids and computers do not mix. The other day, I was drinking some chocolate milk, and I accidentally spilled some of this chocolate milk on my iMac. Luckily, everything was fine. I cleaned it off, and all was well. So I went to bed. The next morning, I woke up, and I went to my workstation, and my iMac with my Super Boomer Zoomer battery was gone. And there, sitting next to my workstation, was my 400-pound St. Bernard named Bernard. And he was smiling. Oh, my God, Allison. He must have smelled the chocolate milk on my iMac and thought it was a giant Hershey bar. And he ate it. So now, when I want to check my Google Plus account, I have to get him to yawn. And his favorite food is sauerkraut. Oh, the doggy breath. So here's the real problem. It is very cold here in Frankfurt. So our little 400-pound puppy Bernard sleeps with us in the bed with Elsa and I. We use him as a blanket to save on the heat, and he is very sweet too. But now, every night at 3 a.m. when the daily maintenance scripts start running on the iMac in his tummy there, he starts to burp, waking Elsa and I. And Allison, oh my God, the doggy breath. Oh! And there's no way we can shut off the computer, and it has my Super Boomer Zoomer battery attached to it that lasts 5 years. Now, here's the dumb question. A colleague of mine told me I should SSH into the iMac in Bernard's tummy there to turn it off. But what is SSH? And is that the best way to remotely log into a computer there? Help me out, Allison, so I can shut it off, that iMac there in the tummy, and turn off the scripts or something, so Elsa, Bernard, and I can get a good night's sleep. You are the Mac Madonna, the Lady Gaga of technology. You are so smart.
Well, Albert, I'm a bit worried that the ASPCA is going to complain about you feeding an iMac to a St. Bernard, but at least I think I can solve your problem. This is going to be kind of a long explanation, but I think it's kind of fun. So SSH stands for Secure Shell. It's a secure network protocol that lets two devices talk to each other over the internet. Now, what does that actually mean to you, though? It means that you can remotely log into a Mac from another Mac. Let's walk through what you can do with it. The hard part is going to be reaching into Bernard's stomach to do this, but we need to set the computer you want to control to allow remote login to control to be controlled by the other computer. For sake of clarity, let's call your main computer Computer A, and the one you want to control, the one inside Bernard, we're going to call that Computer B. The basics of what we're going to do is first turn on a VNC, or Virtual Network Computing Server, on Computer B, and a fancy client on computer A. We're going to enable remote login to computer B and screen sharing for grins and giggles. On computer B, I want you to open up System Preferences and click the Sharing pane, and then check the little boxes for screen sharing and remote login. On that same screen, there's a button that says Computer Settings. In there, you're going to see a checkbox to allow VNC viewers to control the screen with a password. Click that box and add a password. When I first tried this, I couldn't connect, but it was because I was using a 9-character password when they only allow 8 characters. I didn't realize it was even failing because I had my sound muted and I wasn't hearing the error beep. When I tried it on a different computer, it wasn't muted, and that's when I heard the beep. All right, so close that window on computer B. You can get your hand out of Bernard's mouth. You're done with computer B. Now, back on computer A. We need a VNC client if we're going to have any kind of fun at all. There's lots of options, but an industry favorite is called Chicken of the VNC. I'm not sure if it's a favorite because of the clever play on words or the cute logo that shows a chicken coming out of a tuna can, or perhaps the fact that it's open source, so it's free and works really well. But people do love Chicken of the VNC. Once you download Chicken of the VNC from sourceforge.net, and of course there's a direct link in the show notes, you'll open it up and magically see that all of the computers on your network are available, everything that's awake, that is. Find the one in Bernard's stomach, enter the password you assigned, and boom, you're running your other machine. It's really quite amazing. You're just going to see it pop up on screen just like you're screen sharing it from the other room. Now, I do want to give you a caveat here. In my testing, Chicken of the VNC had a lot of trouble controlling Lion machines. I tested it on Kyle's MacBook and Steve's MacBook Air, both of which were running Lion. It would get sort of in, but then it would lock up. I was controlling both of them from my Snow Leopard machine. I tried the reverse, loading Chicken of the VNC on Kyle's Lion machine, and I was able to control the Snow Leopard MacBook Pro quite easily. I found an update to Remote Desktop 3.5.1 that's supposed to fix problems with VNC and Lion, but that still didn't fix it for me, so there might be some bugs there. There's another interesting alternative. You can put a VNC client on your iOS device. Mocha from mochasoft.dk will run you $6 for the full version, but you can sort of test drive the idea by downloading the free Mocha Lite. The Lite version will let you log into another computer and type, but it doesn't give you touch control, so you can't move windows around, for example. If you play with it and see the use for you, then you can shell out the $6. Isn't it amazing how cheap we are with iOS apps now? It's like, whoa, $6, I better really think about that. So we go buy a $4 cup of coffee. But anyway, think about how cool it would be to control your Mac from an iPad, for example. I'm not sure on an iPhone it's that useful, but I think it is supposed to work on it. All right, now I've taught you all of that. There's actually a way easier way to do all of this. You know how you can do screen sharing with iChat, right? Well, it turns out there's an actual application called Screen Sharing built into the Mac, but it's buried in a very odd place. It's buried in System, in the top-level System, Library, Core Services. I can't take credit for finding it there. I read an article in Macworld magazine where they explained how to find it. They suggested dragging it into your menu bar of a Finder window or into the sidebar so you'd be able to get to it all the time without having to remember it was buried down in Core Services. Now, I should also mention that to simply use screen sharing, which does work going into Lion, by the way, you don't have to turn on remote login. You only need screen sharing turned on in the preferences on the machine inside Bernard's stomach. Now, there's another case, though, where you might want to log into a remote Mac. What if, say, it's stuck in some way? We'd asked Bart about this a while back when Steve had a Blu-ray project that had been running, I don't know, it was like 20 hours, and it appeared to be stuck. We asked him if there was some way to check to see if the computer was actually still grinding away, or whether at this point all hope was lost and we might as well crash out. He told us that if we had had remote login enabled before this happened, we could log in to see what was going on. Of course, in this case, we don't want to just screen share because all we would see is the frozen screen we could see by scampering upstairs to stare at that screen. So, to do this backflip, we're going to need to go to the terminal instead. Now, you'll actually get to hear the term SSH in practice here, unlike the way Apple keeps it under the hood for you in screen sharing, all the different ways I showed you before. Starting from the point where we have remote login turned on in the Sharing Preference pane on Computer B, launch Terminal on Computer A. And by the way, if you don't know where Terminal is, it's found in /application/utilities. My example, I'm going to assume that we're sitting at home on our own little network. But this actually does work over the internet when you're not at home. But there's a few more switches you'll have to play with it to work, get it to work, you know, ports and all that nonsense. To connect using the terminal, we have to know the IP address of computer B because it's not going to show it to us in a pretty little GUI, you know, the human-readable name of the device. If there's nothing wrong with computer B, you could just launch system preferences, click on network, then advance, then on TCP IP to see its IP address. But what kind of challenge is that? In our example, computer B is grinding away on a Blu-ray project and unresponsive, right? So we need to know the IP address of computer B. I think we should download yet another tool to make our lives easier. There's a couple of freeware utilities that will tell us stuff about our network, including the IP addresses of devices on the network. I used to favor a tool called MacStumbler, but when I went to install the latest version, it turns out it requires Rosetta, and Rosetta apps are not going to work under Lion. So the last thing we want to do is start down a dead road there. Instead, I downloaded the donationware iStumbler from iStumbler.net. iStumbler shows me a list of Wi-Fi hotspots near me, like the four completely unsafe web networks of my neighbors. You know, they don't listen to me. And you could also see my WPA2 protected Wi-Fi hotspot. I can also look at Bluetooth and Bonjour connected devices. Bonjour is where I found all of my network devices. I could find TiVos and the Drobo and lots of computers. All this stuff was available to me. So I clicked on Computer B in the list, and I got four things listed. Screen sharing, and it said Vara Presenter next to it. Not quite sure what that is. Apple file sharing, secure shell, and secure file sharing. I clicked on secure shell, also known as SSH, and at the top of the screen, I was then able to see a network path to the device, along with a curious-looking terminal button on the right. Well, you know I had to click that, right? Lo and behold, it actually launched terminal for me and pushed the SSH command to computer B for me. So I didn't have to know the IP address and go digging through all those menus. I just clicked on it in iStumbler.net, clicked on the terminal, it SSH'd me in, it prompted me on whether I really wanted to connect to this device, and when I said yes, it said it permanently added that machine to my known list of hosts. It asked me for a password, and I used the password of my login account on computer B, and bada bing, bada boom, I was in. I had originally planned on showing you how to find the IP address of the device, but with iStumbler, you don't even need to know it. Very cool. All right, so now what are we in? What do we do now? At this point, I should maybe mention that I'm a relative neophyte when it comes to terminal commands. I know just a few that seem to get me going, and then I go running to Bart for assistance. I was able to simulate what I would have tried in the Blu-ray lockups problem that we had. The first thing I would do is run the very simple command top, which shows you your top running processes. I'm running this in Snow Leopard, and evidently they changed the way the command works, and it doesn't show the list sorted by the ones chewing up the most CPU cycles, which is what we actually want. If you're in Snow Leopard or Lion, instead of just typing top, put top space dash U, and you'll get the list with your biggest CPU hog applications on top. If your machine is locked up, I would guess that one of the top CPU chewers might be the culprit. Let's say we look at the list, and while Toast Titanium is high on the list as it grinds away on our Blu-ray DVD, we also notice that Firefox is chewing up a lot too. Probably a flash crash, right? Well, it turns out we can quit Firefox right there from the terminal. In the top list, the far left column says PID. That stands for Process ID. I look for Firefox, which is called Firefox-bin, by the way, and I note that the PID was 3804. Now all I have to do is Control-C to get out of the top command, and then issue the kill command. I just love saying kill. Well, anyway, the full command to kill that process completely, with no arguing about it, is kill space dash 9, and then that process ID, 3804. The dash 9 is the no arguing with you part of the command. According to the help file, also known as the man pages in Unix, dash 9 means non-catchable, non-ignorable kill. Isn't that awesome? Don't you wish you had a dash 9 parameter when you were bossing your kids around? Not the kill part, but the dash 9 part. Well, anyway, after issuing that kill dash 9 command, Firefox instantly dies and the computer magically comes back to life. Or at least that's how I imagine it would have been if I'd had remote login set up on that machine before it locked up. That's a good lesson here. If you think you might ever want to remotely log into one of your computers in case of a lockup, you must turn on the remote login now before the problem happens. However, if If you're traveling with your machine and you might be tempted to connect to an insecure Wi-Fi network, like a hotel or a coffee shop, be sure to turn off all the sharing preferences before you step out of your house. Well, Professor Albert, I bet this was a lot more than you bargained for, but I had so much fun with the discovery and learning to teach you way more than you wanted. My dad used to go into elaborate technical explanations with us as kids, and my mom would yell at him and tell him that they didn't understand a half of what you said. He said his method of teaching was like pouring a bucket of water over a wine bottle. Sure, a lot of it didn't get in, but some got in, right? Well, the boys over at Blue Mango Learning, makers of Screen Steps, have been up to something. I teased you a while ago about a new product they've created called Clarify. They have now officially opened the public beta for Clarify so we can talk about it here, and you can help bang it around for them during the beta program. Clarify is an application intended to help you communicate more clearly with people. Unlike Screen Steps, it's not about writing user manuals or creating long, complex documentation. It's about communicating with people. Clarify is intended to achieve the three B's: be organized, be brief, and be clear. Clarify lets you take screen captures, annotate them, and provide a little bit of text around those images to clearly explain to someone what you're trying to communicate. Clarify doesn't have manuals, it doesn't have lessons, it doesn't have libraries, none of that. It's just for creating that one communication you need and to bang it out quickly. After you've created your quick steps, you can upload it to your free screensteps.me account and then send someone a link to the steps you've created. Or you can simply copy and paste the steps right into a lovely email. Greg DeVore, CEO of Blue Mango Learning, wrote a great blog post explaining the purpose of Clarify and where it fits into his own life. I put a link into the show notes so you can go read it yourself and to learn more about the product and try out the free beta test at bluemangolearning.com. Hey, while you're over there, buy some Screen Steps too. Enjoy. Well, next up, let's hear a review from Daryl Shandro of the Blind Access Journal. This is a really, really interesting product.
Hi there, Allison, fellow Nocilla castaways, and everyone else listening to the show today. My name is Daryl Shandro. I am with blindaccessjournal.com. I am honored today to be demonstrating to you a free, new, awesome app in the iTunes store called VizWiz. It's spelled V-I-Z-W-I-Z. In the unique NocillaCast fashion, I'm going to start out by demonstrating and identifying the problem to be solved. I'm blind, and that means that I get into situations from time to time where I need sighted help and it's just not available. Sometimes that means that I don't get the answers to questions I want about objects, or I don't get to read something for days. That may actually cause me to have some problems getting important tasks done. Much of that consternation is past now, thanks to the free VizWiz app. I'm going to demonstrate the app now by simply using it. The way the app works is simple. You take a picture of an object, you record a question, and you send it to people around the world who are there to answer the questions and send their descriptions back to VizWiz. Let's get started.
VizWiz, take a photo. Camera, button. Record a question. Record, button.
What is the expiration date of this almond milk?
Select sources and send. Web workers, switch button, on. IQ engines, switch button, on. Email, select an email address. Twitter, switch button, on. Send, button. Please wait while your question is sent. View answers. View new answers as they arrive. New answers available. Best before March 15th, 2012. Web worker.
That's the expiration date of the almond milk. I know that's still good, of course.
Camera. Button. Camera. Record a question. Record.
What is in this box?
Select sources and send button. Please wait while your question is sent. View answers. View new answers as they arrive. New answers available. Some sort of granola cereal. Name is not visible. Web worker.
So that is a granola cereal. That's helpful.
Camera. Record a question. Record button.
What is in this can?
Select sources and send. Select your answer sources and upload your question to the web. Send. Please wait while your question is sent. View answers. View new answers as they arrive. New answers available. Cream of mushroom soup. Web worker.
Awesome. So I have cream of mushroom soup.
Camera. Record a question. Record button.
What is the expiration date on this bus pass?
Select sources and send. Send. But please wait while your question is sent. Date visible is July 8, 2011. Web worker.
That is a basic demonstration of VizWiz. I've also used it to read parts of menus in restaurants. I've used it to read restaurant bills, restaurant receipts. I've used it to check the settings on an oven. I've checked the temperature on a thermostat. I have even used it to confirm the table number on a banquet ticket at a convention. So there are many applications for VizWiz. It is a very unique and innovative way to use the iPhone. I hope all of you have found this demonstration to be educational, helpful, and interesting. Thank you for listening to me today and for your time. This is Daryl Shandro with BlindAccessJournal.com signing off. Thanks, Allison.
Well, Daryl, this is simply amazing. I can't believe this exists. It's crazy, crazy cool. So, guys, Daryl sent along a link to his Twitter account that he uses for VizWiz. If you'd like to help answer Daryl's question when he tweets them out with VizWiz, please follow twitter.com/DarylVizWiz, and I put that in the show notes. It's DarrellVizWiz. I followed that account as soon as I heard his review. I figured if I can help Daryl answer a question about what's in this box, how fun is that? I looked at some of the pictures that Daryl has posted over the last couple of weeks. Specifically, he had some where he was trying to figure out what temperature the dial in the oven was set to. I realized then that there's one problem for the blind person here. They have to take a photograph of something without being able to see if they're framing it properly. He had a little bit of trouble getting it at the right angle and the right distance so that it was focused, but I think he eventually did get the answer. I'm sure you could get the hang of it eventually, but it's not a task a blind person would normally be skilled at performing. By the way, this tool was created by the Hajim School of Engineering and Applied Sciences at the University of Rochester. They're doing this to explore human-backed access technology, the idea that access technology would be more reliable and useful if humans could back up fragile but fast and cheap automatic approaches. I love stuff like this. Thanks, Daryl, for sending it in. Well, Professor Albert sent in another soundbite, but I promise I won't give any long-winded explanations after this one.
Hello, this is Professor Albert with my very special one-minute review of Lion, the 10 most very interesting features of that lion that just came out there. Here we go. Airdrop. Perfect. We love it. Drop it in there. Throw it across the room. Very, very nice. Accessibility. Wowzer, wowzer. Very nice. And download those high-quality voices. Very nice. Autosave. It's about time. New iCal. It's about time. New mail. It's about time. Very nice. New window resize. Grab any corner. It's about time. We're finally catching up with the Windows machines there. Faceplant. What the heck is Faceplant? Full screen apps. Hello, what if you have two monitors there? Mission control. Very nice. Launchpad. My computer is not a phone. Wake up, Apple. Wake up. This is Professor Ablett with my one-minute review of OS Lion.
Well, Professor Albert, I think that is the most succinct review of Lion I've heard yet. Sure, people can drone on and on and on about it, but you got all the salient points across in just 1 minute. Hey, wait, how do you feel about natural scrolling, Albert? I was thinking today about the company Smile. This company is so aptly named because they do make us smile, because their software is just so darn good. When I type in a snippet of text and it instantly expands into a long phrase or tough-to-type word, I kind of smile inside. When I moved over to Lion on my production machine, I actually forgot to check whether Text Expander would work with the new OS, but I smiled when I realized that of course it works under Lion. This is a company who stands behind their products as very, very few companies do. They even have a 90-day money-back guarantee, and that makes me smile. When I meet Jean McDonald at Macworld every year, there's big reasons to smile. She's wonderful. She embodies the fun and professionalism of the company Smile. I only wish I were a lawyer so I could use PDFs like everybody else seems to, because I don't actually have any need for PDFs. But if I did, I could play more with PDF Pen. I know many of you do use PDFs, and PDF Pen helps you manage those PDFs, and of course it too has that money-back guarantee. Remember Stefan's testimonial about Disk Label? Talk about smiles from that one. If you want to buy software from a company that writes great products, make sure they work for you, you cannot do better than Smile at smilesoftware.com. Head on over there and buy some of their great products. They're amazing. And it helps the show if you let them know you heard about it here. This was a week of great user contributions. I actually had to push some out to next week. We have a first-time review by Greg Norton, also known as Altadena Greg, in the live chat room. Let's listen in.
Hi, Allison. Altadena Greg here with a review of the New Yorker magazine app for the iPad. Now, I know it will shock some of my fellow Nasilla castaways to hear a content review here, and they will immediately wonder, what is the problem to be solved? The answer is that much-discussed problem from when the first iPad came out. What is it for? Turns out that reading the New Yorker magazine is a pretty good answer. The app is free and available for download from the iTunes Store. Each individual issue costs $4.99. However, if you already subscribe to the paper edition, the iPad version is included at no extra charge. This includes the iPad version of everything you receive in the mail, plus the extra single-topic collection issues that would otherwise require a trip to the newsstand. While you can subscribe online for $60 a year, there are a lot of discount offers out there for subscribing to the New Yorker. Just watch your postal junk mail this week and you may see something. Each week's issue drops late on Sunday. This is a welcome improvement to me because I've spent years reading this magazine a week late since I live on the left coast, far, far away from New York. Downloads take a long time. Each issue is around 160 megs. Frustratingly, the download pauses if you leave the New Yorker app to go do something else on the iPad. But the long wait is so worth it. The app beautifully displays your library with all the issues available, downloaded or not. Oh, and did I mention that you can access issues clear back to 1925? The goal of the designers seems to be to deliver an experience that is as close as possible to reading the actual magazine. All of the content is there, every photo, ad, calendar listing, and article presented in the same sequence as you would find thumbing through the real magazine. Even the familiar fonts from the print edition are preserved. You can browse by swiping to the left, much like turning paper pages. And when you arrive at an article, you scroll down through the virtual pages. So the app is always presenting a somewhat composed layout on the screen, just like one would expect in print. There's also a drop-down table of contents with links to each item for faster navigation. Or use the replica of the magazine's printed table of contents, which contains those same links. While preserving the look and feel of reading the print magazine, the editors are also constantly adding more and more content that is unique to the iPad version. These include slideshows, videos, and audio files. For example, most of each issue's poetry is now accompanied by a button to push to hear the author reading their work. There are sharing options for the feature articles with email, Facebook, and Twitter integration. Another unique feature is the ability to browse through just the cartoons. They can be displayed in their own little gallery. And speaking of humor, there's a very funny orientation video embedded with each issue. You'll probably only want to watch it once, but it will painlessly get you started using the app. Finally, a couple of caveats. While the app works in both portrait and landscape modes, there is no way to increase the font size like you can in other apps. This surprised me at first, but the default type is big enough, easy to read even with my fast-approaching 50-year-old eyes. Also, the good folks at Condé Nast have been bringing content to the web for a while now. There are podcasts available in the iTunes Store, and they have lots of interesting content from the current issue at newyorker.com. But if you've made an online account at the website, you'll need to create a new account for your iPad app. This caused me some confusion during setup, but it may just be me. We all know that print publishing is in a state of transition and is struggling to see its way forward. It's refreshing, then, that The New Yorker is including this iPad edition for all subscribers at no additional charge. The extra iPad-only content is a welcome bonus, and it makes the whole thing a great value. I hope other magazines develop similar apps and pricing structures. I do feel guilty, however, when the magazine arrives in the mail after I've already read it. But I try to responsibly recycle it. Maybe the day is coming when we'll be able to receive our magazines only electronically and turn off the paper.
Well, thanks, Greg. What a great review. I love your style, and the information was awesome, too. I think you've done this before. That doesn't sound like a first-time recording. Thanks for sending it in. Well, this week I submitted a review for Tim Verporten of the Mac ReviewCast. It was for a product called SpeechTrans from Nuance over at SpeechTrans.com. Now, this wouldn't be a review if we didn't start with a problem to be solved. Let's say you're on vacation in a foreign country, and you hope to be able to talk to the local people. But as it turns out, you don't know any other languages than your own. There are a lot of options for you. You could buy a book of phrases and look like an idiot thumbing through it while the person you were hoping to talk to wanders off impatiently. You could drag your Mac around under your arm so you could launch the dashboard app from SysTran that'll translate what you type into it. But we know how people are about just carrying around giant Macs. All right, how about something on your iPhone? That would seem quite a bit more modern and efficient, wouldn't it? Enter SpeechTrans, created by the Nuance folks, well known for their amazing speech dictation program, Dragon. I had great fun testing this out with friends of mine, and it's got the real idea of the Star Trek Universal Translator to it. When you open SpeechTrans, you're prompted to choose what language you want to translate from and to. SpeechTrans supports 15 languages, including German, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, Dutch, and Arabic. Once you choose your languages, you get a split screen. The top half is where you'll be entering your words in your own language. The bottom half will be for the person with whom you're trying to communicate. On the top half, you can either type in a phrase or simply touch the record button and record your own voice. A spinning gear comes up for a few seconds, and then SpeechTrans types into the top half exactly what you said. A second later, two things happen. SpeechTrans types in the second language what you said, and it speaks out loud what you said in that second language. Now, your co-conspirator simply taps the record button on the bottom half and answers your question in their own language, and it translates back to yours in text and in voice. It's really, really cool. But I'm afraid the accuracy wasn't anywhere near the 99% speech accuracy that Nuance promises. I tested it with two native Mandarin speakers, a woman who learned Spanish in South America, a Chinese man who said he spoke Japanese, and a Belgian who speaks both French and German fluently. I asked each of them a question regarding how long they'd worked in their current company, and sadly it got the number completely wrong. Sometimes it was more subtle in its errors, where the other person told me they totally would have gotten the point of what I was trying to ask them. One of the oddest errors happened when SpeechTrans correctly interpreted the voice input and typed out the Chinese correctly, but when it translated that now typed text to English, it was incorrect. That surprised me because it would seem that the speech recognition is the really hard part, not the text-to-text. You'd think that type translation would have been the easy part. One very unique feature of SpeechTrans is that you can post your Facebook wall in a language you don't even know. I had to try it a couple of times to get the English correct, get it to understand me, and I can't swear that the Dutch I posted was correct. When you post, it puts up the input and output language on your wall. You can also send a Facebook chat, bump it to someone, or post to Twitter with SpeechTrans. It might be hard to keep track of how many characters you're typing, though. Come to think of it, how does that work with Asian language characters? Well, anyway, I posted to my Facebook wall in Dutch, hoping that Nightwise from Belgium would respond, and he did. Here's exactly what he wrote. It sounds about right. The translation factor adds some demented factor to it, but we get the idea. I would not make any international peace agreements with this, though. Things might get lost in translation. SpeechTrans is on special right now for $20, and there's also a version for those with hearing impairments for $50. But wait a minute. Isn't there another alternative? What about Google Translate, free on the iPhone? I decided to give Google Translate a whirl, assuming it would be a really poor alternative and would help me realize how poor, but very powerful, actually, SpeechTrans is. First of all, Google Translate doesn't allow you to share with Facebook or any other social network, and it doesn't bump, and it doesn't have the two-pane window for the conversation to occur. However, Google Translate has an interface that I actually like better. You have a much vaster choice of languages, 15 of which are available through voice. The rest must be typed in, done by typing into the phone. That's the same number of voices as SpeechTrans, except Google Translate gives you three kinds of Mandarin, Cantonese, Mandarin, or three kinds of Chinese, I should say, Cantonese, Mandarin, and Mandarin slash Taiwan. And for Spanish, they give you Spain, Latin America, Mexico, and Argentina. I had wondered that with SpeechTrans. My limited amount of understanding about language was that the dialects, especially in Chinese, were pretty extensive. And my roommate in college from Argentina would constantly argue with her boyfriend from Cuba about how he mispronounced things in Spanish. So I think having that option of those different dialects is probably important. Google Translate is much more intuitive in how it lets you speak into it than SpeechTrans. In SpeechTrans, you have the two red record buttons from the input and output language, but when you touch them, you get a spinning gear for a while, which causes most people to start talking right away. They're supposed to wait until this weird red symbol that actually means stop comes up on screen, and then you click the stop button when they're done. In contrast, Google Translate simply puts speak now on screen when you hit the microphone button, and then when you stop talking for any length of time, it assumes you're done. I vastly prefer the way Google Translate does this part of the job. When you've translated your voice or text, there's a button that allows you to enlarge just that text so you can show it to the person you're trying to communicate with. When you're ready for them to speak back, you simply click the button to reverse the languages. As far as accuracy, my more limited tests with Google Translate were not any more successful than SpeechTrans. While people could understand the basic gist of what I was trying to say to them, there were frequent errors that caused confusion at the least and insult at the worst. Bottom line time. If you need a translation device for travel, I think either of these products would get you by. But please don't make any business deals or ask for your girlfriend's hand in marriage with either of them. I'm not sure SpeechTrans is worth the $20 when a free alternative from Google is available. If SpeechTrans had higher accuracy, more languages, a better interface, it might be worth it. But it doesn't win on any of those points. I would go with Google Translate. And I probably will next time I leave the country.
Well, it's that time of the week again. My favourite time of the week. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. I'm your host, Mark Dalton, and this week I'm talking to Alison Sheridan. Hi, Alison. How are you this fine day?
Oh, I'm doing great, Mark. I'm really excited to be on Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is, a dream come true for me, actually.
Well, we've probably completely confused the audience at this stage. So do you think we'd better explain kind of what's going on?
I guess so. So Mark Dalton of the Tech Lounge is on the show today. And I wanted him on Chit Chat Across the Pond, but he wanted me on the Tech Lounge. So we said, what the heck? Let's turn the tables and let Mark do his format for the Tech Lounge. Only the person he's going to interview today is going to be me. So I am the guest on Chit Chat Across the Pond.
Well, on the Tech Lounge, you see, we take a very scientific approach to these things. No expense has been spared. We've consulted an extremely well-known psychologist, a graduate of GetCertificatesOnline.net, who's been practicing for over 12 months. Okay, he's got a very, very posh office in Shumania, and he's devised a set of 20 questions that's going to enable us to get a complete personality profile of the legend that is Podfeet.
Well, I look forward to the opportunity and just to have such greatness and such a mind in research to do this is wonderful, Mark.
Well, apparently it's a proven technique in Shumania. So without further ado, okay, we're going to go straight to the questions. Now, Alison, You haven't seen these questions, have
no,
you?
No, and I'm a little nervous about that. I said to put them in the show notes, but you did not do that.
You said put them in the show notes, and you never said before the show.
And you did write the word questions.
I did write the word questions, so the questions are in the show notes.
Now I'm getting nervous.
Okay, so the rules are simple. We're going to ask the question, and we're not going to say a word. There's going to be no explanation given.
Oh, dear.
Yeah? Tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready. I'm sitting comfortably.
Okay, so we're going to start with a nice, simple one. Name, rank, and serial number.
Allison Sheridan. Let's see. Rank. I'll go with 53 years old. Serial number. That one I'm going to plead the fifth on, I guess, since I have not served.
Okay, another easy one, just to kind of warm you up and get you ready for what's to come. Current computer of choice.
Current computer of choice. That's easy. That's the 15-inch MacBook Pro, the latest one with Thunderbolt that I can't plug anything into. Plugged into a 24-inch cinema display that flickers because there's a firmware problem somewhere between the Thunderbolt Mac and the 24-inch cinema display. So I'm glad to have $3,000 worth of computing in front of me and having the screen go blank on me every once in a while. It's pretty nice.
So no sore feelings there.
No, it's only been 4 months that Apple's been saying, yeah, we know that's a problem. Sorry, we'll get on that really soon. I guess they've been busy lately, shoveling money into the bank.
I think that they've been kind of preoccupied with one or two things.
I guess so, fine.
Fairness. Okay, question three. Spell Glockenspiel.
G-L-O-C-K-E-N. S-P-I-E-L. Glockenspiel.
Well done.
Was that close?
That was perfect.
Absolutely. Okay, perfect. Back to you. Spell ophthalmologist.
Oh, no, it's a one-way question. You don't get to ask questions.
I've only met two people in the world in my lifetime since I was 12 years old that can spell it. One was an ophthalmologist. The other one was a teacher. Okay, fine.
If they get it wrong, they would be in trouble, wouldn't they?
Right.
Okay, question four. What is an oscillocast?
What is an oscillocast? Well, when I created the podcast, my feeling, and it turned out to be true, was that I wasn't sure where it was going to go. The whole medium was brand new. I started in was it March or May of 2005, and it started in 2004. So I wasn't really sure what I was going to want to do. I knew it would have to do with technology, but I didn't know exactly what it was going to be. So I thought if I pick a topic for the title, then maybe if I would be stuck doing that, whatever went on, I would always have to stay with that topic. So I created the Nocillacast as a way of just kind of being real generic and weird, and it kind of had a little ring to it, but it doesn't actually mean anything. Technically, it is actually my name spelled backwards. But the idea was to have it be generic. Now, I've started putting the word Mac in the middle because people can't find my podcast in iTunes if they search on Mac. And so that actually lets them find it because it is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias.
And then that's the tagline that I think we've all...
That's what the judges were looking for.
Now, if only we could search in iTunes or the like with our voices.
Exactly, exactly. Then you could find it.
A pitch.
Just say, ever so slight.
Okay, so question six. What was your first computer?
It was a 1984 512K Mac. Our friend Calvin had gotten this computer, 128K Mac, and he told us to go over and see it. My husband and I went over, and just instantly we had to have that. By the time we bought, the 512K Mac was out. We spent $3,000 then, too. It seems like my path seems to always run at that $3,000 mark. Luckily, it's a little more capable computer each time, but yeah, that was a sweet machine.
So that sounds. Do you still have it?
No, I'm afraid not. That didn't have a floppy, or it had a floppy drive. It had no hard drive, and I remember we bought a box of 400K floppies to go with it. That was $100, and so they were $10 a piece for 400K floppies at the time.
See, because that in auction now could really cover the cost of a brand new 27-inch iMac, couldn't it?
That probably would have worked. Who would have known, huh? Wait, don't bring up the 27-inch iMac. I don't want to hear about it.
Okay, so question seven. I can make a chicken out of a towel. What's your super cool party trick?
I can do live long and prosper with my toes.
We won't ask for a demonstration.
Oh, I'll do it. This is video. I'll do it. Do you want to see it?
Okay, we want to see it then.
All right, let's see if I can pull this off. I might be in your lower third. We'll see. Let's see. Here we go. Ready?
We're ready.
That's it. That's as good as it gets.
It's there, isn't it? It's there. Well done. I think that deserves a rapturous applause.
It took afterwards. And that was the actual Podfeet doing that.
And that's the Podfeet themselves.
You know, people ask me whether I know how to program, and I said no. When I was in computer science class, I was teaching my toes to do that. Because it actually takes a great deal of concentration to send the signals to pull those toes apart correctly.
Can you do it with both feet at the same time?
I can't do it with my left foot. If for some reason that fourth toe curls and it just can't pull it off, I'm afraid. I'm a one-foot trick pony.
Oh, well, 50% of the way there.
Hey, I had a party trick ready at the drop of a hat. You got to be impressed with that.
I must say, it usually throws people. So well done for that one.
Unabashed there.
A tough one for you now. One thing on your wish list.
Only get to
a
pick
must
one.
Have.
Oh, must have is different than wish list.
Well, what is the number one, the top of your wish list?
Well, it's funny. I was actually thinking about it today, and in my last show, I referred to a certain person as my pusher. And that person's name is Mark Dalton, and he has sucked me into his madness at every single turn. I'm almost positive he'll be talking me to a TriCaster eventually. I suspect that's going to happen. But I was actually thinking maybe this Christmas I'll want Steve to start helping me do, like, better lighting or a green screen or something like that. And the green screen, the only reason I need a green screen is because you got me to get Wirecast, and Wirecast does that that green screen stuff, so now I need it, right? I'm afraid we're in the spoiled category here in the house. Maybe I should say my top wish list is a 27-inch iMac for Steve.
Well, that would win you a few fans, I think, in the chat. But it was your wish list, not Steve's wish list, in all fairness.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm pretty spoiled right now. One thing on my wish list is I hope my Lion upgrade goes well.
You haven't done that yet? Well, maybe that's a subject for another chit-chat across the pond.
Not on my production machine, but actually, as soon as we're done here, I'm pulling the trigger. I'm doing it.
Ooh.
Now that I had you test Wirecast for me.
That's it. And I can report it works well.
Excellent, excellent.
Not from the little niggles.
Oh, no.
But we won't go into those just yet. We'll save those for one of the pusher sessions.
Okay.
And wow, have I got some stuff to show you.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Am I going to have to write more checks?
Anyway, question 9. What modern day invention do you wish had never been invented?
Reality TV. Is that an invention?
Oh, I don't know if that's an invention.
A dumb thought. Modern day invention. Ah, that's easy. Windows.
Nice.
I hate Windows with every fiber of my being.
System mantra, though.
Say again?
Could that not be classified as operating systems?
Yeah, but that's got to be an invention.
Have been invented.
It doesn't have to be a physical thing to be invented, right?
No, it doesn't. Okay, so Windows.
It would have to be. I mean, if you put somebody outside my office to monitor it all day long, you will at least 3 times a day hear someone inside there say, "People pay for this? You've got to be kidding me." It's not quite as bad now that I'm on Windows 7. I started on Vista. That was the first Windows I ever used. I never used XP. It was horrible. It's like driving a red hot poker through my brain the entire time. It was horrible.
Well, so at least we're talking about the operating system Windows, not just Windows. Kind of be a bit over the top, I think. A bit of an overreaction.
I suppose.
Okay, question 10. Cats or dogs?
Cats. Little tough. I grew up with a cat and a dog my whole life, but since I got married, we haven't ever had a dog. We've had cats, and they're pretty swell, but I'm not, like, crazy about them or anything. I'm not going to be one of those weird old cat lady people, I don't think. I love dogs, so we'll probably get a dog someday, but I'd have to go with cats if I have to make a call, Mark.
Okay, fair enough. It was just a question.
I'm going to stress out on this.
Okay, what's your worst tech purchase this year?
I'm not allowed to say Drobo, am I? I don't know if I had any really bad. Now, I didn't technically buy the Rim BlackBerry Playbook. I got it as a review unit. Is it okay if I didn't buy it?
No, I think it has to be purchased.
Oh, where I actually spent my money. I don't think I've bought anything this year that that was a failure. Maybe, I don't know, I got an iPod Nano that I dropped once and shattered the screen, and then I put it through the laundry after I'd gotten it replaced.
If you've still got that Lion upgrade to go, I suppose there could still be space.
I do have that. I can't think of any software I've purchased that I didn't like. No? I've got nothing there, Mark.
Maybe we'll ask that one again in 6 months' time.
Yeah, perhaps.
Okay, we're going to move things up a notch now.
Uh-oh. They're getting harder?
Matthew and Nicola divide $57.98 in the ratio of 11 to 4. How much does each of them receive?
If it's 2 o'clock my time, it's 8 o'clock your time.
Well, we thought you were a maths person.
Ah, 2 years of calculus, straight A's. I cannot add or subtract. And you know that, because I bet nobody else gets that question.
We're going for a pass on that one, are we?
Mark, if you had simply asked me to divide that number by 2, I couldn't have done it. Literally. I was at 57, 25, 20. No, I couldn't even do $57 divided by 2. New math. I blame it on new math. Look it up. It's in Wikipedia. You'll see. It's not my fault.
Question 13. Proper book or ebook?
Ebook. I'm a big reader, love to read. I'm absolutely never, ever, ever without a book. Keep them in my hand at all times. If I'm getting near the end of a book, I'd be carrying 2 books so that there was never a gap. Or what if I read those last 10 pages and I might have a stoplight I was sitting at and didn't have a book to read? And, you know, I'm the kind of person, I go to the doctor and I'm really happy when they're late because I get to read longer. And but as soon as I got the iPad and I put the Kindle app on there, I did review all 4 of the different book readers, and by far the Kindle is better than all of them in my opinion. And so I've been reading ebooks ever since. I was just looking at, I have this stack of books I was going to read that are in my closet, and I could tell I'm never going to read them. I might as well just give them away. I'm done. Moved on. Love it.
It has taken over.
Yeah, and it's funny because I probably hadn't bought a book in a year or two, because my friend Diane and my friend Marianne at the gym would just walk up and say, here, and they would hand me books. I go, okay. And especially my friend Marianne, her book choices were amazing. I mean, there wasn't anything I didn't like that she gave me. And so I didn't buy any books. She bought them all for me, and then I'd give them away to somebody else. And now I'm paying, you know, $10, $12 a book. So they're making a lot more money on me, that's for sure.
Question 14. What's in your backpack?
Well, the backpack I carried today had the 15-inch MacBook Pro, the charger, which I didn't really need, but it was already in there. I had a 500 gig, or how big is this? 750 gig? I forget, this little Western Digital pocket drive, Novatel wireless. That's the same one. That is it. He's holding up the same one in front of the camera. That's funny. I Novatel 4G MiFi hotspot. One of my 2 iPads. I didn't have them both with me for some reason. A wallet, a pair, some keys, a Nano, an iPhone, and a BlackBerry.
It's a pretty technical backpack.
And most of that is in my purse most days. I actually bought my purse at a company called REI in the United States. It's a backpacking hiking store. It's, you buy bicycles and backpacks and that sort of thing there. And so I bought a purse there that looks, it's really a backpack, but it looks like it's got a little girly swirly looking thing on it, so people think it's a purse. And I carry every day in that 2 iPads, a BlackBerry, and the iPhone, the Novatel MiFi. I actually still am carrying the old MiFi, so I've got the 4G and the 3G. VGA cable for the iPad. The camera connection kit. I don't carry any makeup. I don't carry a hairbrush.
Does this backpack come with a Sherpa?
It should. No, it's actually very light. Well, the second iPad made it a little heavy. I'm having a little trouble with that, but I need them both for certain reasons. So.
Okay, well, Moving on. Question 15.
Okay.
Night at the movies or curled up on the sofa?
Both. We watch movies on the sofa. We don't go out to the show very often because there's just so many good reasons. Number one, you can drink wine at home. Number two, you can pause and go, wait, the guy in the black jacket, was that the husband of the guy or is that the killer? I'm confused. And I get confused very easily. I can sit there and play on my laptop while I'm doing it. So we are often going, wait, who's the guy in the black jacket? Because we're both on our laptops tweeting each other at times. And Steve and I are both big old Twitter holics and now Google Plusers and or goopers, as Not Nurse Ratched would call them. And then Steve bought a really nice sound system, and we have a, I don't know, 52-inch big old TV, and so we've got the big TV and the great sound, and it's a lot more comfortable than going to the show.
Can't argue with that one.
We occasionally would go to the show. We've gone to, you know, like Avatar. We went to IMAX and 3D and the whole thing, you know, for the big experience. But I'm not going to go watch some situational comedy and pay, you know, $30 to go. But we did just go see the Green Lantern at the show just to have a date night out. That was kind of fun.
Okay, well, that brings us on to question 16. What's your favorite movie so far this year?
Oh. Trying to remember what we've I have a terrible memory. I should have mentioned that. I would have been recording what movies we've even seen. I know we just saw, what's the one where the guy gets his arm stuck on the under the rock and has to cut his own arm off? We watched that. That was a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a hoot. It's really in the delivery. I'm not sure if it counts as this year, but I really love the movie The Other Guys. It's a Will Ferrell movie, and it's absolutely hysterical. It is constant humor, just lots of little tiny jokes, not some big guffaw kind of thing as much as just little tiny snippets of jokes that are just hysterical. I really enjoyed it, so that was a fun one. I don't know, best movie, not sure. Tonight we're going to see The Proposal, so our buddy Ron recommended that. We watch movies with him on Friday nights. We'll see how that one goes.
Okay. Question 17.
I'm getting nervous.
Social networks.
Yes. Right. Yes.
What's your view of the Winklevoss brothers?
I think they're very pretty. I like to watch them row. I don't know. You know, it's just such comedy that how much money did they actually get? You know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, and it was the principal of the thing. And I think maybe they need a hobby. And you would have thought training, didn't they train for the Olympics? They didn't get in, but they were training for it. You would have thought that had kept them busy, right? Spoiled brats? I don't know.
60 million or whatever it was would have kept them busy for a while, wouldn't you?
You would think, but it was the principal of the thing, Mark. but I'm afraid Mark Zuckerberg is such a little snot. You can see just wanting to get back at him under any condition. So I don't know. I don't like any of them, but at least they entertain us. It's better than listening to all the other kinds of lawsuits, right? All the patent lawsuits. Those are getting old.
The patent lawsuits? No idea what you're talking about.
Oh, no, there haven't been any of those. Just like there haven't been any hacks into Sony either, right?
This is England. We don't do things like that.
Oh, really?
No. Everybody just carries on as they want to.
Huh. Sure. Now, how many phone models have you guys invented again? How many were those?
Desperately at me now, saying, stop talking. So I think we better move on.
Oh, okay.
18. Fruit salad or chocolate cake?
Chocolate cake. Oh, my goodness. The chocolate cake has got to have chocolate icing, and it can have chocolate sprinkles on top with chocolate ice cream.
So a bit of a sweet tooth there.
Fruit salad. No, just chocolate.
Just chocolate.
Chocolate at all times. Always chocolate. Dark chocolate. Belgian chocolate. Stefan Lesage's Belgian chocolate.
So have you ever met Mr. Shadwell?
Yes, Mr. Shadwell's Swiss chocolate as well. He came to Macworld Expo, and Katie Floyd and the rest of the Mac Roundtable and I were up on stage, and he came up and he handed giant boxes of chocolate to Katie and I on stage, and then everybody else got like a chocolate bar, but we had these big boxes. We love Paul Shadwell.
I think he has many admirers.
I think he does. I don't know. He must carry like four times as much luggage out as he does back to be able to carry all that chocolate. We actually had trouble when we went on our vacation to Europe last year that we had too much chocolate to fit in our suitcases. And plus the beer that Stefan gave us, we ended up buying a bigger suitcase and putting our smaller suitcase inside it and packing beer and chocolate around the outside edges. It turns out tennis shoes are a really good way to pack beer. We just shoved a beer bottle into each shoe and with the heel down at the bottom at the heel, and it worked perfectly. It was wonderful.
Having done significant travel myself, I can testify that shoes are a great way to package a glass or other fragile objects.
I was certain when the luggage came down the ramp, though, we would smell this wafting smell of beer as the luggage came down, but it didn't. And I drank them all on the show. It was wonderful.
Well, I always work on the basis that you'd be able to spot the baggage handler that was dishonest enough to go through that case because he wouldn't be able to stand up.
Good point.
Okay, so we're coming to the penultimate question now. There are 8 eggs. 2 of the eggs have passed the sell-by date and are bad. 3 eggs are selected at random. Work out the probability that 3 good eggs will be selected.
I don't know. With time and a pencil and some thought and not dead air on a radio show, I could probably do that one. That one isn't as hard for me.
Well, maybe we'll have to hand that across to the Silla Castaways and see if they can come back with the answer.
Maybe I'll just sit down and work it out.
We know you, Alison, and I expect that that's something that you will do because you won't be able to let it go.
I've been working on there's a geometry problem you can find on the web called the hardest, easiest geometry problem in the world. And it was invented first discovered something like 1822 or something like that, way, way, way back. And I've been working on it for about 4 months now, on and off. And I have yet to solve it. I have pages and pages and pages. In fact, I'm going to hold it up to the screen right now. I have it right here handy because I pull it out when I'm bored and I need something to work on. I work on it during meetings. I can't solve it. I will someday.
And is it supposed to be actually quite easy to solve, but very difficult to see how to do it? Or
yeah, it's one of those things. It's basically an isosceles triangle with 2 lines drawn from the corners up to 2 of the sides, and there's 1 interior angle that needs to be figured out. And it just looks like you ought to be able to, you know, add 3 angles, add to 180, or these 4 add to 360 for, you know, 2 crossing lines, or you ought to be able to do a side angle side. And it's incredibly difficult. The guy who posted it said that about 2% of the people who sent him solutions have actually solved it. The other 98% are just wrong, or they're guessing, and they can't. You have to be able to send him a proof to get it to count. And he said it's so hard that if he hasn't done it for a year or two, when he goes back, it takes him a really long time to figure it out again. It's baffling why it's hard. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Put a link in the show notes.
If you're into geometry and proofs, you'll enjoy it.
Or just puzzles that you can't quite get the hang of.
You like those?
I do, yes.
Oh, good. I will send this to you then.
Tasks. Although I must admit, the part of the pleasure asking you the maths questions was because my math sucks.
Oh. That's no fair then. Why did you put 2 math questions in? That was mean.
My questions is part of the fun.
I guess so. I could get the probability one, but I would need some time to noodle it.
Okay, well, I think we've given you a hard time. So, question 20, where can we find you on the interweb?
I know the answer to that one. You can find the NoSillaCast Mac podcast hosted at podfeet.com, and I'm on Twitter at podfeet, and let's see, I'm at Google Plus. I don't like Facebook that much anymore. I just look at pictures of my kids and stuff in there, but that ought to be enough places to find me, I think.
Wonderful. And when does the podcast go out?
The podcast is recorded on Sunday nights live on if you go to podfeet.com/live at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And I have no idea what time that is in England or Ireland or Australia, apparently, or New Zealand. 5 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday nights at podfeet.com/live. And then the show actually gets published just a couple hours after that, maybe around 8 or 9 p.m. my time. And then so it's always in your Monday morning feed. We haven't missed a show in well over 4 years, have not missed a weekly show. It has come out every single week. Several years ago, I was sick one time, and it was a couple days late, but didn't actually miss any. Even when I've been on vacation, I can trick Katie Floyd into doing it for me. In fact, she's going to be doing it in a couple of weeks, so you're going to get Katie Floyd this very soon.
Sounds fantastic. Well, that's brought us to the end of the questions.
Okay. I'm sweating here.
Absolutely marvelous catching up with you. Now, I understand that the Silicast Live show is is actually a video show.
Yes, it is a video show because of my friend Mark Dalton, the pusher, has got me into using tools like Wirecast. I broadcast my video of me and video of the live chat and video of my desktop running GarageBand, so you can see me editing the show. The best part about it, though, is the chat room. The fans of the show, the Uber fans, have named themselves the Nocilla Castaways, and Mark is a founding member, I believe, of that fine crew, and they are... just a fabulous group of people, very kind, very welcoming. If you come to the show, you'll be welcome with open arms. If you're late, you have to buy the beer or mojitos. There's a whole lot of strategy behind that, but it's just a great time. I really, really enjoy doing it. It's like a little party every Sunday night. A couple weeks ago, I was in a real bad mood when I started the show, and by the time I was done, I was happy because I'd been hanging out with my friends, and they're so tight-knit. Last year when we went to Europe, we weren't there to do the live show. We had recorded earlier, and we weren't there at 5 p.m. on Sunday night. So they all picked up and went to somebody else's show and hung out together there. So I'm not sure I'm actually even important to the show anymore, but the Nocilla Castaways have a really, really good time doing it.
Well, I can tell you now, Wirecast 4.1 is available, and it's got lots of new toys.
Oh, fantastic.
So you're going to absolutely love what we can do with the show going forwards.
And you'll be pushing more of that on me?
And all you're going to need is a credit card.
Oh, don't!
There are some lovely bits of hardware available that are going to not just make it even easier to broadcast from home for the normal show, but to do shows on the road while you're out.
Wow. Now, am I going to need to go to Wirecast Pro?
Let's not worry so much about what it's going to cost, and let's look at the benefits that we're going to receive.
Do you see how he is? Do you see what I was talking about last week?
See, what you need to remember, Alison, it's not about the need. It's all about the want, okay?
So I was talking to my friend Dorothy today, and she was telling me how she had turned her Linux server into a Mac file server. And I asked her, I said, did you have a need for that, or did you do it just because you could? And she said, I just did it because I could. And so I started making other suggestions as, hey, make it do this. You know what you need? You need a VPN server now. That's what you need, you know.
Well, did you ever need to do the Nocillacast?
Yes, I did, because I was irritating my friends and neighbors and coworkers so much, because I would always be grabbing them by the shirt collar and saying, you got to see this really cool new tool I found. It's really amazing. It does blah, blah, blah. And now, instead of torturing those people quite as much, I still torture them a little bit, but instead of torturing them quite so much, I torture people who really, like, they choose to listen. I figure it's voluntary, so it was really for the good of humanity.
Well, that might be much more of a case that they needed you to do than Nocillacast.
I suppose we'd have to go that way.
Okay, Alison, thank you very much for your time. I'm afraid that's only a small fraction of the questions that our psychologists put forward. But I think we've got a good understanding now of what makes you tick, as well as your passion for chocolate cake.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. And until next time, happy computing. Well, that was a little bit of an unusual chit-chat across the pond this week, but I had fun doing it. Mark is such a delight, and you can tell we have a lot of fun goofing around together. He was teasing me with not one, but two math questions, probably because I messed up on the time zones and I showed up 2 hours late for our interview. Technically, I was there at the time I said I should be there, except I told him to be there 2 hours earlier. He's a good sport, that's for sure. Well, that's going to wind things up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills, Screen Steps, and Smile. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, and I mean it is really, really fun, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Now with Wirecast, we're in high def. There's a new version of Wirecast, runs on Lion, a new version. It's all exciting. We've got high def. It's all cool. It's really fun. And the chat room's fun. And you can meet the Nosilla castaways. It's a really good time. I definitely recommend it. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.